Well, in case you hadn't heard, it's WrestleMania weekend. What does that mean? A lot of shows. I think probably around, I don't know, 3,000, 4,000 or so going on in the Los Angeles area this weekend. Not just the stuff happening in the ring, of course, but things happening out of the ring as well. That includes live podcasting, because podcasters, you know, we really make the wrestling world go round, right? One of those shows happens after WrestleMania, and it happens to be with two of my favorite people, one of which has been here multiple times. So on this week's Josh Jason's Punch Out, we're going to talk to Jack Encarnacio and JP Saro of the Lapsed Fan. That's right, the one and only Lapsed Fan, who are doing a live show post-WrestleMania in Los Angeles on Sunday night. This is their first true live show, and so I had the guys on for about an hour. We talked all about it. We talked all about wrestling in general, as only these two guys can. And there's lots of imitations here as well. And there's lots of laughing because these are two funny guys. And we just got to laughing. So you guys are going to enjoy this and get all the information to attend the Lapsed Fan Live event coming up this Sunday in Los Angeles. Tickets are still available and all that good stuff. So let's get right to it. Myself, JP Saro, Jack Encarnacio of the Lapsed Fan, talking about what else? WrestleMania weekend and the first ever live show. Enjoy. Not only one special guest this week, friends, two special guests this week. Two special guests you know very well. You know their voices very well. You know everything very well. They have a big show coming up this week in beautiful Los Angeles, California. A lot different than Manchester, New Hampshire, I'll tell you that much. Jack Encarnacio and JP Saro, the original, the captains, the co-chairman, everything from the Lapsed Fan, and they're here today. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us, man. Appreciate it.
Really happy to be here.
So Jack has been on the show before, but of course JP has not been on the show. And it's a big day for everyone. JP, I'm feeling it.
You said we got a big show coming up, and indeed we do. Well, it's the big show this Sunday, April 2nd, 2023.
So there's that. So, do people like these guys? Like, they just laugh at their own jokes? Like, why'd you have them on the show?
Yeah. Well, I think that's the only reason. We have to laugh.
Right? I've always wondered. Do other people in the world not laugh at their own jokes? Because I think that's sad if you don't laugh. If you don't think that you yourself are funny, what's the point?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. JP, you have a very well-lit office. I got to tell you that much.
Oh, thank you.
And I like the posters behind you. People cannot see at home, of course. They can just visualize.
Yes.
It's not like Dave Meltzer's famous office, but it's very well lit, very professional there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I got my Chinatown poster.
Yeah. And you have a comic book poster right behind you. And that's Hammerhead. And he is driving his head into the famous Spidey Mobile, of course. And because you can see, JP, no one can see it. So I might have a Spider-Man thing back here.
I see it right there.
Yeah. And Jack has just a blurry background, similar to May of My Nights of Drinking, I'd say.
Yes, I have what's referred to as a psychotic background.
Very good. Very good. So, of course, all right, so we're talking about a lot of things, but, of course, the show coming up, the only post-WrestleMania show that anyone's going to want to listen to or attend, right? You have a Sunday at around 11 o'clock at the in Los Angeles. And, of course, I don't have my notes here. But
that's fine.
Tell us where it is, and we'll go into it.
Yeah, be glad to. So a comedian reached out to us, and he said, I wanted to do something WrestleMania week, and I had plans with a bunch of carnies, and what do you know, they didn't come through. And if there's one thing we've specialized in at the Lapsed Fan going on 10 years now, it's responding when the bat signal goes up.
Yes.
We don't go looking for attention. We don't go looking for the spotlight. Those things tend to come looking for us. And that's exactly what's happening on Sunday night, April 2nd, immediately following night two of WrestleMania at SoFi Stadium. Make the drive to the Valley to have sort of a post-WrestleMania experience and party that makes you feel like less of a social degenerate. Because we know how it can feel to exit two nights of WrestleMania and just feel a certain hollowness. There's just such an...
There's two nights of wrestling.
2 nights of wrestling in general. Yep. And for a lot of folks, a whole week of shows and you can't, you know, it's overstimulation, and we as wrestling fans, we kind of fall for this every year at WrestleMania time, you know, thinking more and more and more and more is better. And, you know, perhaps we'll see the quote unquote best match of the week, which inevitably will be in front of 300 people instead of, you know, 60,000.
Right.
And so we felt like it's actually appropriate, instead of trying to jam ourselves into the pre-WrestleMania festivities where everybody is doing their look at me routine, we decided to do a post-WrestleMania party where we can sort of commiserate. And what we're finding at the Comedy Chateau in North Hollywood, 11 p.m. start time, you can look up the Comedy Chateau's information on Google to get details and the tickets and the address and stuff. It's on Lancashire Boulevard, which is a hike from SoFi, but certainly worth it. We're going to make the drive with everybody else, having taken in 2 nights of WrestleMania. What we're finding is a lot of people, Josh, are coming that aren't going to Mania. You know, we call ourselves the lapsed fan, but at least in my case, I'm still just as devotedly following wrestling as I ever have. But it turns out our listeners, and JP can attest to this, are actually lapsed. They exist, and they're willing to fly from all over North America just to come to this show as opposed to even watch WrestleMania.
We got people coming from Montreal, from you know, Midwest America,
Carolinas,
Carolinas, all the way to the East Coast, who have no intention of going to WrestleMania. They don't want to go to WrestleMania, but they're coming to see our post-WrestleMania show.
They're coming to see us explain why they don't want to go see WrestleMania.
After it's over.
Because, you know, it's like, as you know, and as anybody listening to this at the Observer site knows, you know, around the launch point of the WWE Network in 2014, they began trying to make hay out of this idea of the lapsed fan and trying to overproject the amount of people that might be interested in subscribing to an over-the-top streaming service. What is the amount of lapsed fans or lapsed fans who have an affinity, that was one of their favorite words, an affinity for sports entertainment that we can sort of lay claim to or get people excited about the possibility that they might be willing to subscribe to WWE Network. And it was right around that time where we were like, okay, what do they mean by lapsed fan? What are the characteristics of a person that would pay $10 a month for something that they don't watch at all anymore? You know, what are those people missing in the current presentation of wrestling? Now, things have changed in terms of the presentation and the makeup of the business drastically in that past decade. So it's not exactly the same state of play it was back then. But I think, you know, JP speaks beautifully to this because he doesn't necessarily follow it as closely every single week as I do. But I think, boss, we've come to a thesis over 10 years, right? What is the lapsed fan? Why are people coming to the Comedy Chateau to hear us commiserate about the sad state of affairs that is being a wrestling fan in 2023?
Because they want to know the truth. They want to know the truth of what it is to be a wrestling fan in 2023, why they're not wrestling fans in 2023, and why, as always, it used to be better.
Hmm. What's it missing, boss?
What isn't it missing? Hmm. There is a better question. I mean, for me, as a fan who, you know, Josh, I say that my fandom really ended probably in 2012, I feel like, because what I consider to be really the end of my week to week fandom is when I decided, you know what? I'm not watching Raw anyway. I'm going to take it off the DVR. I don't watch. I have 18 episodes backed up. What am I doing? Like, I'm not going to watch these in a row. I don't watch it now. I read about it. You know, I do read about it. But I'm not watching it. So cut the cord. Mm. And that's it. Why did I cut the cord? Why? It's for me. It's just a lack of, as I've said many times on the show, a lack of spontaneity and a lack of two guys wanting to have a fight. That's what it's about. Two guys settling their differences in hand-to-hand combat, faux hand-to-hand combat for sure. But, you know, two guys just who've involved me emotionally in their story enough that I'm willing to let go of the fact that it's a phony business. And that they're going to go in there and they're either going to fight each other and I'm going to be invested in a guy winning. How many times in the last maybe 20 years have wrestling fans been actually invested in who wins as opposed to how good the match is and how well it's booked.
Yeah, you reach a certain point in your fandom where you become dispassionate about winners and losers, yeah. And that's fine. But at that point, you are fundamentally disconnected from what makes wrestling magical.
Right.
What makes wrestling magical is having a rooting interest and being able to manipulate people into having a rooting interest, particularly along the lines that you set out ahead of time. You say, we want the people to want this person to win. And if a wrestling promotion fails to do that, that's why people are lapsed, because they're no longer able, they're no longer savvy enough to know where the audience is, to push them in a certain direction, to lead the horse to water and get it to drink. And it's such that when it does resonate, like it does with Cody and Sammy in the past several months in WWE, it strikes us as some amazing novelty that they actually presented a story that's clicking into place and feels like there's a culmination and feels like it's not presenting a challenger that people have given up on and shit on because of Twitter 2 months out from the show.
I can remember a time, you know, they're making a big deal out of it now. And I remember times when I gave a shit about who was going to win every single match.
That's right. That used to be table stakes.
I cared who was going to win Texas Tornado versus Dino Bravo at WrestleMania 7.
But that's just because you were a kid. No, it was because the business allowed you to immerse yourself in the outcome. And there were less moments along the line, less beats that took you back and said, wait a minute, okay, I'm now enjoying this as I enjoy a figure skating match. Weird. Which is fine. I can enjoy a figure skating match.
Out creating moments.
Yeah. But that's just not the magic of wrestling. That's not that sort of in-between place that it uniquely occupies that makes it its own category of this blend of, you know, fighting and storytelling. It can't over-index to the fighting. It can't over-index to the storytelling, right? It's when it's that perfect 60-40 mix in the middle that we all know. We've all had moments in wrestling that have given us goosebumps. It's just the way they present the business now, it's not set up necessarily to bring you those moments in as reliable a cadence as you used to get. There's just as much on a show that takes you out of it that gets you into it. And it used to not be that way.
Because, you know, the business has evolved. The business has evolved, and right now what we are currently trying to establish is best practice digital transformation.
Exactly. Right, Josh?
Exactly.
With our customer journey. WWE. 2020. Disrupting wheelhouse.
So, Vince, how do we use ChatGPT to transform the viewer proposition?
Well, I mean, when it comes down to it, we're looking at big data. And we're talking about moving the needle in order to leverage our own best practice within the circumference of a disruptive, paradigm of holistic, you know, in a holistic approach of activated culturistic learnings. Next gen.
Forgive me.
We're talking about next gen return on investment.
Right. So, you know, the business has been just fine since, you know, the C-suite started talking like that. It hasn't degraded at all from a viewability perspective, which is great.
I'm just in awe of actually seeing an invitation live in person. This is great. This is more of what we're going to expect coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, we actually found we did a hit with Conrad Thompson on his ad-free shows
platform. We did a hit. Listen to you.
Yeah, we're hitting. We're not well. We're not missing. I can tell you that, Josh. Right. And we're certainly not taking a base on balls. It was a similar response. You know, we've always kind of wondered if the mystique of the imitations on the show lies in the fact that you can't see us, but people kind of dig seeing the contortions, particularly, of course, on JP's face, since he does the lump sum of them. So it's going to be tough to strike that balance in our first of a kind live show. We're on stage, but I think we'll pull it off. And I'm obliged to mention, by the way, that it's not just going to be your co-chairs on stage. There's going to be several pros from the stand-up world. They're going to join us as well, and we're excited to have them. Mike Lawrence is somebody that you may have seen on several of the roast battles that Conrad has put together for the likes of Bruce Pritchard and others. He's a lapsed fan. We've dined with him, and we know he's down for the cause, so we're looking forward to seeing him. Mike Falzoni, who's a veteran of Adult Swim, and the Netflix Is a Joke Festival show.
I thought you were going to say a veteran of adult films.
There may be one or two of them there. It is the Valley.
Mm. It is true. Very good. Very good point.
I can think of a few we could invite. Earl Skakel will be there, also a veteran of the Ric Flair roast and some other kind of things. He's going to be involved with a Dolph Ziggler show on WrestleMania week. He'll be stopping by to give his thoughts and, you know, top of mind takes after Mania wraps up. Also, Josh Alba from the Monday Nitro Party podcast is going to be with us from the New York City side. David Piantowski, his family actually owns Ringside Collectibles, which is near and dear to any Laps fan's heart. Yeah. So we're looking forward to seeing him. He does the Turdsville podcast, and it's actually his brother, I believe, that owns Ringside Collectibles. And of course, Ray Gutz. Ray Gutz is the comedian, New York City guy with a ton of LA experience that came to us and said, you know, we should actually try to do Laps Fan Live, you know, and sort of sit down and talk about what hit and miss at WrestleMania and sort of the state of the lapsed fan and just act like idiots. And we've got a lot of supporters coming out. There's going to be a caravan coming from SoFi of a bunch of fans that, you know, are going to battle the traffic together and likely imbibe on the way over.
It's such a weird thing how it occurred, too, because we talked a little bit, you know, because in I remember when it was right before COVID hit, we were scheduled to go to Florida for WrestleMania, and they had and we were brought on to do a live show, and we were prepared to do that. Then everything, you know, everything, the world shut down. Mm-hmm. But we had talked briefly about doing a live show in LA. Because I used to live there. I was there. I lived there for 8 years. And so I did have some connections at theaters. Like, I have friends who run smaller theaters out there, and we could have done something, but it just never panned out. You know, we just kind of forgot about it. And then all of a sudden, Ray Gutz comes around and just is like, yep, let's. I'm like, oh, all right. Yeah. If you're going to handle it, great. If you're going to handle all that shit, great. If we don't have to do anything but go out there and perform, great. We win. Yeah.
If you call it performing, I mean, we're just going to get up there and just fucking talk. And we have some stuff in mind, some signature stuff. We did a couple of StarCasts. People who went to StarCast might remember us from 1 and 2 in Chicago and Las Vegas. We did a couple of live shows there and got some incredibly awkward glances and silence on some of the harder hitting things we forced people to confront. But perhaps the highlight of the two StarCasts we did was, of course, StarCast 1, which was All In weekend, very historic night in the business, historic weekend. And we took the stage the day, much like this, we took the stage the day after the actual wrestling card. So we had the advantage of sort of, you know, putting into context what had happened instead of preview. There's a lot of previewing. There's not as much post-gaming because everybody has to get on flights and stuff. And one of the things that the StarCast crew had put together was that Cody Rhodes was doing like a cigar party on the patio of the hotel, which was directly adjacent to the room we were performing in.
Just by chance.
And Cody, who was asked in the run-up to that event, you know, or perhaps it was the run-up to Double or Nothing, you know, what is the AEW audience? And he said, the AEW audience is the lapsed fan, and he's exactly right about that. We were having lapsed Vince kind of pontificate on the stage with Cody right next to us, you know, outside of earshot, but still physically right next to us, about what this could mean, what this portends, that Cody has jumped to this new upstart organization that had sold out the Sears Center in Chicago and had promised to chart a new course in the business and open up new opportunities and perhaps present a challenge to him. And what Lapsman says is, you know, it's only a matter of time before he comes home. You don't understand. You know, in this business, as fans and as wrestlers, your only measure of worth is what Vince thinks of you.
Yes.
And also your only measure of worth is what you perceive Vince thinks of something. Guys get over because they think Vince hates that kind of that kind of look, that kind of approach, that kind of in-ring work, that kind. And so this guy's over with me because I think Vince would hate him. Similarly, this guy or gal is over with me because I think Vince would love them. You take your pick, but the point is, Your whole psychology every day as a wrestling fan revolves around how you define yourself in relationship to Vince McMahon's worldview.
When it comes down to it, what's going to happen is I don't have to do the hard work. They do the hard work, define themselves into something that's going to make money. I will then buy them back, and then I will make more money off of them with my purchase.
That's right. And so Vince predicted at that StarCast that Cody will come back, that Cody essentially just infiltrated this elite group that was creating such a stir and so much buzz. he managed, Lapsed Vince did, to kind of separate the alliance between Ring of Honor and the Elite that started this whole thing. Let's not forget that, you know, Ring of Honor provided a lot of the juice from a production standpoint to actually put that show on. Gary Juster and company and Kerry Silken. And the Elite were with ROH at the time, and the relationship was there with New Japan. And what do you know, within months, what came to be the AEW crew has nothing to do with Ring of Honor, has nothing to do with New Japan. And so that was a success in terms of blowing up the Bullet Club idea, which was selling at Hot Topic, and Vince McMahon cannot have that. So he saw to it that that got decoupled substantially. And then, you know, the AEW takes off on the back of Cody in a lot of ways. Certainly Kenny and the Bucks are big draws in their own regard, and Jericho and Moxley, and you can't downplay their contributions. But you can also draw a pretty straight line and a subtle but noticeable downturn in AEW interest to Cody's departure. It was a cult of personality around Cody and what he represented in so many ways, the real AEW, the beating heart of AEW.
I thought a cult of personality was CM Punk song.
Well, yes, to coin another phrase. But, you know, it all, in the final math, as Lapsed Vince predicted, it was all just geared to create a new WrestleMania headliner. And we're going to see that coming up this weekend.
So when do you guys get into town, and what is your schedule for the week in Los Angeles? I assume you must be meeting with producers, agents, porn stars, as you mentioned. What does your weekend look like coming up, weekend?
We're keeping it minimal. I mean, yeah. We're arriving Friday. We're flyering. We're going to try to have like this, you know, guerrilla street team mentality going on where we try to bring people into the circle that might not be Lapsed fans quite yet. They just don't know it yet. And there's no shortage of places all around Los Angeles to raise awareness. We've got a few special.
The highlight of the weekend leading up to WrestleMania, honestly, I think, is, you know, my wife's from there, from LA originally. And we're going to have breakfast with her aunt. And my wife's uncle are going to make chilaquiles for us. So that to me is the highlight right there, because his chilaquiles, fucking bomb.
I mean, I'm very much looking forward to that. And the gentleman JP referenced is an old school Olympia auditorium head who remembers Blassie and Pepper Gomez and that whole period of NWA Hollywood, if you will. So looking forward to chopping it up with him as well. We tend to
Hollywood dude, brother, what?
Yeah. I shouldn't have said that. We tend to find ourselves, you know, connecting with people that remember the territories of the area we're in more than anything else. But, you know, we go on weird, like, jaunts. We went to, like, the Home Alone house. We went to Chicago. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, like, an hour away while everybody like else...
Everybody's doing, you know, these other things. You know, wrestling-centric things, like these activities that are being planned, and we go the exact opposite. We go as far away as possible.
Yeah, I mean, And it's not just a gimmick. I mean, just things pull us in that direction. One year, instead of going to WrestleMania,
just to bring this up,
we went to the ruins of the Pontiac Silverdome.
Yes, of
and
course.
Gained entry and did an entire podcast about walking through the decrepit, time-worn, flooded, blown-out remnants of a building that...
Crumbling.
Right. A building that's gradual, slow, steady decline and ultimate collapse says all you need to know about Lapsed fandom, you know, and the hold it has on you as fans. There's a reason that just the demolition of a, you know, way outdated football stadium in Pontiac, Michigan actually hit the heartstrings of wrestling fans, because it represents a certain nirvana of what wrestling could be that's pretty much gone now. And it doesn't mean that what's replaced it is inferior, although we would argue it is. It just means that there's a certain thing we went to wrestling for, a certain charge, a certain immersion that we could get out of wrestling that it's not quite there anymore. The reason the crowds go crazy is half performance as a crowd. You know, what's expected of us? Like, can we rise to the occasion instead of, you know, let's go nuts because we're so excited to see who's going to win and lose. And so that was us going in a totally different direction than where the majority of the wrestling world eyeballs are trained. So it's kind of it's kind of weird for us to step into this sort of position where we're considered part of the WrestleMania week festivities in a very, very, very small way. I mean, I'm not trying to suggest we're on par with some of the big events that are going on that week, but
I would, but
I know. Yeah, I'm sure if I needed you to, you could do that, and vice versa. If you needed me to, I could do it. But it's sort of fitting that it's after it's all over,
Yes.
you know, after all the pretzels are eaten, after everyone has sort of, you know, felt exhausted by the whole thing, the
And when most
overstimulation.
of the people are heading home.
Yeah, we'll be heading to the stage. So I'm not sure how we got on all that, but that's where I landed for you, Josh.
So you're doing, are you guys going to any shows at all?
No. Besides Mania, no.
Oh, so you are going to Mania.
Yes, that came first. That was another example of us not looking for trouble, but trouble coming looking for us. We didn't want to go to Mania. We didn't buy tickets to go to Mania. I mean, of course, we always kind of consider it because people like when we go to that thing and do like live journaling on our Patreon. It's been a big hit in past years, but it's been much more proximate. You know, New York is not a problem for us to get to via car. This was a lot more of a time sink. So we were like, oh, God, you know, we haven't gone since the last Jersey Mania. And so someone came along, a great listener, who said, you know, I'm a Rams ticket holder. You guys, season ticket holder. You guys want to go to Mania? And it's like, Jesus, do you really say no to that? You know,
Right.
all right, here we fucking
And
go.
not
All
only that,
right.
but this is the second time, because when they first announced LA in 2020, as for 2021, or
I think it was. Yep.
this guy contacted us then. He emailed us then and was like, look, I got tickets when they go on sale. You know, I got these season tickets. And so, you know, who knows? Like, you never think to yourself
Right.
after that's all happening, is this guy still listening to the show? Is this guy still a season tickets holder? You know, what are the chances of all that? Well, still is, and we're still going.
How many years passed? Yeah, man, that's a testament. You know, their shows are so long. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
Because
we get complaints if the show's under like 5 hours. Legit. Like, people are upset. How am I supposed to get through my week with only 5 hours?
I'll tell you a little secret about podcasting. The listeners who will stick with you for 6 hours are the only ones worth dick.
Damn right.
The rest of them will chase the next whiff of, you know, takes, right? Just hot takes. And what you want, if you want to build a sustainable podcast where you've got a listener base that you know for certain cares enough about what you do that they're willing to part with cash and make it a viable enterprise, see who sticks with you after going that deep and that hard for that long. That's what's up.
Speaking of porn stars, right?
Yeah.
Damn right.
I was going to say, yeah, exactly. We're trying to, you know, we're trying to get them hard here, but we're not going to get them
Always
off
fish
till
inside too. So there you go.
April 2nd.
So does that mean the show on Sunday will be a 8-hour extravaganza? You're just going to keep going until the cleaning people or the last people left? What's going to
Let me
happen?
tell you, if I'm awake by the time we get there, we'll be lucky. All right. I've told two people that we know are coming. I told them to bring a mattress, bring either a blow-up mattress or someone had like a random mattress in the back of their truck that they always have there. They're gonna bring it. I said, great, because put it on the stage. We get there. I'm gonna bring a blanket. I'm gonna curl up and I'm gonna go to sleep because it's like, are you kidding?
It's we do live calls of the pay-per-views on our Patreon. We've been doing it for years, the monthly WWE pay-per-views. And the running gag is that, you know, because Boss always pops, I call him Boss for those who don't know, always pops a top right at the beginning of the call. And by main event time, he's feeling pretty sleepy.
It's more often than not that I'm usually leaning on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Like, I have to.
Show him what it looks like. I always wonder what it
This
looks like.
kind of is usually like this. So I'm looking up like this, legs are up like this, and then
You remember Josh, the New Japan show in Madison Square Garden with
Yes,
Okada and White?
of course.
So one of my favorite moments in doing Laps Fan was when we dragged him there because we were trying to do the immersive WrestleMania experience. This is historic. At the time, JP was working at Madison Square Garden as a tour guide, and it was pretty fun to give some of our listeners a little special tour ahead of the New Japan Ring of Honor show and kind of see wrestlers milling about and setting
We
up
get
the
to go
ring
to
and
the
stuff.
we get to go to the inside the arena before they close it off and stuff. It was fun. It
It
was
was
good
very
fun.
fun. And so, you know, this has got to be the kind of thing that's going to hold his interest, right? Because there's this like this rooting interest that current wrestling fans have that if you only saw this match, if you only saw this wrestler, you would respect the fact that I'm a wrestling fan. That will not happen. For as long as you live, that will not happen. We say this all the time, and this is heart and soul of the podcast. Anyone in your family that knows that you like wrestling will never stop holding that against you in the back of their mind. They might not say it. You name one person you've ever told that you're a wrestling fan who ever forgot it, whoever fails to bring up, oh, you're still watching every time they see you. Mm-hmm. That is the truth. That is the shame and pain of being a wrestling fan. And that's what we don't shy away from. That's what we don't pretend we're graduated past shame. On the podcast. Shame. That's correct. Mm. And so that said, we'll take JP to New Japan. He can't possibly argue with the hard-hitting elbow wars. He can't argue with the head drops. He can't argue with strong style selling out the world's most famous arena. And he certainly won't be able to argue with the kind of work rate that Tetsuya Naito and Kota Ibushi will be able to put forward in pretty much the great match of the evening. And about 5 minutes into this exchange of, you know, strong style, where sweat flies and we actually try to hurt each other for real, because that's what it's come to, I turn to my right for what should be the moment where he finally understands why all these people are here, and he is snoring. He is out cold. We even tweeted a picture of it. As this is JP during Naito Ibushi. Mm. Out. Out cold. And it's just, we just embrace it, because I call it the boss index. It's unbelievable. It's uncanny almost. When he sees something that's like, all right, well, you know, that's pretty good. That's modern wrestling, but that's pretty good. It always ends up being something that the promotion builds around. It always ends up being a wrestler that gets over and stays over. MJF being the most recent example. MJF came to the ring at All In Weekend. And I know a lot of people in the business knew what he was capable of, but not many. Back in 19, not many. Mm. And he was like the second match to the curtain. And JP was like, that's it. That's the guy.
I was like, he was so, you know, he goes in there and it wasn't a great match. It wasn't a good match. But what he did was play heel like old school. As we know, that's what he does. He's so kayfabe about the whole thing and lives the character. And I was like, this guy's the fucking best thing I've ever seen. In years. And he's proven that.
Yeah. Totally, I mean,
he's spectacular. I mean, I've put him on. I remember it a couple of years ago. We were guests on a podcast. Mm-hmm. And we did I think a Survivor Series team or something like that. Who would be on our Survivor Series?
All time
Survivor Series team. I added him. I put him on my all time list.
The host didn't even know who he was.
Yeah, right. People are like, what? Who's that? What an MJ? What is an MJF?
And this is before, I mean, he was in AEW, but this is before he really got the rocket put to him, certainly before he got strapped up. So so I've been marveling as a person that follows the incremental wrestling developments at how sort of Boss can speak to that person that is on the sidelines as a wrestling fan that does sort of see, you know, a presentation every now and then that's like, that actually resonates. That has teeth. That has depth. And then you get all wrapped up in your personal feelings about MJF, and then there's all this like Twitter DM activity that informs how people praise or don't praise. And it's like, guys, like you're losing the plot here. Like
all here, it's all here. It's what makes you feel something. You know,
completely like, independent of what about, you've read.
It's all about emotion, like the motion daddy. You know, that to me is the core of it. The root core is honestly what makes me want to see someone else again.
Right.
What does someone do where I'm like, oh, you know what? I kind of want to see that again. And there's been no wrestling show where I've watched where I'm like, oh, I want to see that again, but I like that person. And so I'll, you know, follow that person to a degree, but it's, you know, that's part of it. Like wrestling shows used to end and yeah. We wanted more. And now I want less.
Now I want an hour or two back almost every single pay-per-view weekend.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, we're lamenting a state of affairs, Josh, that isn't – we're not advocating to reverse. You know, that's like the lazy argument. The lazy counterpoint is like, oh, just want to change the business to be all kayfabe and slow matches and steroided bodies and drug-addicted wrestlers. Oh. Like, if you want to go down that road, you know, if you want to – caricature what we're trying to say, have at it. But you know, the fact of the matter is, the reason we're lapsed and the reason we're sort of sad about the state of affairs is because we know it can't be reversed, because we know it makes no sense for the guys and men and women who are making money in this business now to somehow stop being the kind of wrestlers they are. That's why they are where they are. The marketplace conditions have changed. You get noticed by doing a lot more insane things. You get noticed in terms of gifts, in terms of virality. You get noticed in terms of, you know, just maybe like a, you think of Ricky Stark's first video, that kind of 1.5 minute stroke daddy thing that he did on YouTube. And it's like, it's all there. Like, that's awesome. Like that's great self-starting promotional activity. But it's not like we're suggesting that anybody should change a single thing about what they do in wrestling today, because they are creatures of the environment.
I'd love it if Seth Rollins wouldn't do a goddamn superplex to a Falcon Arrow. That'd be nice. Stop doing that.
We'll stop complaining about that when he stops doing it.
Right.
In terms of it never being a finisher. I mean, Josh, you're of our vintage. You're of our age.
Yes.
If a guy did that in back when we all allowed ourselves to, you know, believe in what we were seeing.
If a guy did that in 2001.
Oh, my God. And he kicked out. How is the Falcon Arrow, how is the superplex into the Falcon Arrow not the most devastating finisher in wrestling?
Right.
I mean, I'm asking, you know, go ahead.
We used to pop for a leg drop, brother. Right. And that was it.
Exactly. Brother.
And you look at the damage, we're getting into that in our total nonstop Hogan series, the damage that did to his back. You know, it's like, it's not even like these things are low risk.
Right.
It's not even that we're asking for a wrestling that was sort of like treating wrestlers like
I should have seen you. I should have seen your brother.
What about the Axie Boomba? You did that for years in Japan.
I should have done Axie Boomba.
That could have been better. But, Ichiban. You know, so that's kind of the voice that we try to bring to the wrestling conversation. And you could take it or leave it, but plenty of people take it, and that's the fucking point.
That's right. They're going to take it long and hard, and they're going to like it.
They're going to need it.
Like TNA Law.
Yeah. Oh, did you see that?
Of course I did.
All right. So yeah, JP, take it away.
It's funny how individual tweets that I just happen, because, you know, I can't keep track of all of them, but if I'm just kind of scrolling for a moment and I see someone... And there have been so many times where something, just someone's off, you know, whatever, some kind of throwaway remark suddenly just gets me going. And I was like, holy shit, LA Law, TNA Law. I said, I can do this. I said, I can do this. This should be pretty easy to do. And so I made a license plate thing. Like, I was like, I'm going to mimic the whole LA Law intro, to the point where I had a template of the actual, I ripped one of their intros off of YouTube, and every cut I made was directly as it was cut on the intro. I was like, I really wanted it to be that literal, because I think that's gonna make it funnier if everything is exactly the same length, and try to even match up images where if they're walking through a door, see if I can get two guys walking through a door and stuff. And it just was I mean, I was laughing making the damn thing. I was just like, this is so stupid, but I love it. And it just, you know, take instead of images of LA, I get images of Orlando, you know, the whole thing, like totally make it. And even subtle things. I don't think anyone has noticed this yet. At least no one's called it out. But on the license plate, the date says January 2010 on it.
The beginning of, right.
Yeah. You know, so the beginning of Hogan and TNA. Just like little things like that.
For the uninitiated, the TNH series, the Total Nonstop Hogan series, is us marching methodically and painfully through Hulk Hogan coming into TNA in January 2010 with Eric Bischoff, and just really taking stock with the benefit of hindsight of the absurdity that they subjected us to under the guise of trying to be a competitive number two promotion, and just how like creatively bankrupt they were when forced to, well, you know, the Emperor had no clothes. Right, like we always think Hulk Hogan is a wrestling genius, but he's got nothing when it comes to actually getting anybody else over. Right, he's got two stories in mind that have ever worked in his life. Eric Bischoff has about three, and they put him to work, and they kept failing. And
it's funny too, because I even said it's funny because when it came to cutting promos for putting guys over, he got it. He did great, actually. Mm-hmm. There are two or three promos where he put guys over and it was really outstanding. Like it actually got me excited about those people. And I hate this. This is the most, you know, we've done many journeys over the years, many journeys, like our little mini series of, you know, ultra focused, either on a territory or a match or an event. This has been the most excruciating. Like it is, going through TNA, and I've tried to avoid TNA for our entire existence since we started doing the show, I wanted to, I'd like, no, never, never. We're never doing TNA. And then he, then Brainiac down here, the fucking idea of doing Hogan thing. I'm like, ah, all right, man, that actually kind of works. That kind of works for us. And it's just been just the most.
It's so bad.
Excruciating. I mean, it's some of the worst TV in wrestling history. It's and the, awful.
The LA Law idea comes from the fact right. that when you get right down to it, so much of what Hogan and Bischoff did in TNA was arrange backstage meetings that resemble the intro sequence to the LA Law television show. It's just people walking around, exchanging papers, getting animated about administration, right?
Talking about formats and the and this business and this company brother and this thing and all these corporate things that nobody cares about. Like if you look at the greatest pro wrestling stories and the greatest pro wrestling TV shows, nobody cares about the company. You care about the individuals. But all they do is talk about the company and this is going to bring us to the top. And oh, brother, you know, we're getting this thing back on track, dude.
We're fucking 12 months. Our first year of coverage is over 2010, and they're still getting this thing on track. They're still pulling the nose up on this thing. And that's what's been so revealing is like you think you know Hulk Hogan, but until you actually grapple with the week by week of TNA with him having the real power, you actually realize who he is at his heart. Like when he's already lost a lot of money in the settlement with the Graziano family. He's lost a lot of money in the divorce settlement with Linda. He is not the Hulk Hogan that's sitting on, you know, generational wealth anymore. And so what does Hulk Hogan look like when he can no longer go in the ring but has to still sell a bill of goods, many might say, to TNA that he kind of can still add value even if he isn't building another matchup. And, of course, he's in the ring within 2 months and it does the lowest rating in the history of Impact when they go Monday nights in March of 2010, March 8th. And so it's I feel like we can't, you know, we've talked about Hogan from the beginning. We're Hulkamaniacs, right? We understand wrestling through the prism of what Hulk Hogan was able to do and elevating it to a different level, a different tier. And you can't understand Hulk Hogan without really grappling with the things that the TNA run told us about what's at the heart of the man and what he actually thinks about this business and how he maneuvers when he can't even drop the leg anymore. And, yeah, it just looks like L.A. Law every week. You know, people are walking into conference rooms and people are...
All these meetings backstage in his office and it's just... Like, it's just so weird. And, again, all this corporate talk, like, as if anyone cares... Nobody cares, and then there are legal issues. Now you get Dixie Carter suing, or you're trying to pulling a lawsuit on Hogan. You got threats of lawyers by Eric Bischoff. Eric Bischoff knows all the lawyers, and
great TV guys. Definitely, if nothing else, building the star that's going to take TNA to the next level. That's what
if anything, building the next match too, right?
Right,
building the next match.
That's what injunctions do: build interest. Injunctions sell tickets. Process sells tickets. Circuit court sell tickets. Buying off judges for court hearings we never see sell tickets. Meeting in backstage boardrooms about positioning players sells tickets.
Are you not entertained?
I mean, when you go back and realize just how overweighted it was, because these guys that couldn't go anymore all sold TNA on the idea that just them being on the screen, and yeah, you look at the minute by minutes and they're the highest rated of the show. It's like, yeah, but you're not going anywhere. The amount of money they spent in 2010 to be exactly where they were in 2009, by the time it's over, less profitable. Amazing. It's just a testament to how wrestlers are, how good they actually can be if you get them in the right circumstance at making sure that check keeps coming in.
And it's just, you know, and I say this every time, literally every time we record, it's like if we're not going to see him wrestle, Hogan's worthless.
Yeah.
On camera. You know, unless he's putting somebody over, you know, then he's okay. But this week to week thing where he's kind of contributing to storylines, I sit there flabbergasted because you know he's not wrestling, but he's trying to make you think that he's going to wrestle, but then he doesn't. And so it's this bait and switch every single time. And I don't want to see him wrestle when he's, you know, at this age, when he can barely walk to the ring. You know, I can't believe that it went on as long as it did. It's unbelievable.
And the larger thesis is like, of all the wrestlers who have ever lived, how did it come to this for Hulk fucking Hogan?
Yeah.
And what does that tell us about the kind of lives that our current favorite wrestlers can count on when they're in their golden years? I mean, yes, perhaps Hogan wasn't a big drug user. You know, Hogan is obviously a significant steroid user.
I've never, but brother, I've never abused steroids, dude. I'm currently not on steroids.
As in for the past hour.
I'm brother, as of right now, dude, I am not on steroids, dude.
Do you use steroids?
I have used steroids. I don't currently use steroids, brother, and I've never abused steroids.
Just like I currently don't drink water because for the last hour I have not. And I'm starting to feel it. But yeah, just I felt like that was the reason to do this, was because the TNA run coincided with all of the things that happened in Hulk Hogan's personal life that created this cascading disaster. And Hulk Hogan should be the one that everybody else can point to and say, that's the life I want in retirement. And they don't get to have that. Wrestling fans don't get to have that. They only get falls from grace. They only get people sticking around too long. And you know, I'm overstating the case. Of course you can find wrestlers that retired with dignity. But the fact that it's so exceedingly rare that the list comes to mind right away says all you need to know. And the fact that Hulk Hogan still has to kayfabe and do video, social media videos inside the Dodge Charger with the 9mm on the side seat. Oh. It's just, don't forget who we're dealing with here in terms of the people who have what it takes to get to the top of this business and stay there.
Barney's.
How long did the Hogan run last for? Do you still have like another year plus of shows at least?
Yeah, he left in 2013, but we're going to start accelerating it. We're going to start covering longer periods of time in one episode because starts to happen is they eventually, if you can believe it, start giving up on this whole like messaging of we're going to go out every week and talk about momentum. They finally give up on that, and so Hogan's contributions are less verbose and less – he's less all over every show. You know, it's more like the Hogan segment. So that's a lot more digestible for us, but – we're trying not to miss any nuance because, man, do these guys all tell on themselves during the TNA run. Oh, my God. Yeah. Nash and the money promo is talking about, oh, God, don't even get me started. When I got in this business, I said it was about money. 1099. I mean, these guys are talking about tax terminology.
Hey, you know what? You know, they want a big, fat contract. You know, shit. So I can go home and drink a bottle of Pinot.
I felt like Bogey. I felt like Bogey in Casablanca.
You ever see Treasure of the Sierra Madre? It's totally like that. I'm like Bogey and Kate Hepburn all in one. You know? Shit.
Kev, tell us you've impressed yourself with how many films you've watched without telling us you've impressed yourself with how many films you've watched.
Well, you know, I got these great channels, you know, on TV. This is a great indie channel. You know, watching, it's all about student films, and it's, you know, it's great to see who's up and coming. You know, I love, you know, I'll probably sit there and watch maybe, you know, a big, you know, sometimes I really think about how much of Spencer Tracy I'm actually like, you know.
Glass of wine and a good film, Kev? Huh? How about it?
Sit home, you know, every now and again I get in a Chaplin mood.
Don't we all? More like Marx Brothers, if you ask me. Anyway.
You know, a big fan of, you know, watching old school D.W. Griffith films, you know. It's fucking great. These silent pictures, man. They knew what they were doing.
A lot of podcasts do imitations. A lot of podcasts do wonderful imitations of wrestlers. We are the only one that does the inner monologue of wrestlers. Thank you very much.
That's very true. That's very true. As we kind of hurtle towards the end here.
Yes.
Hopefully not of all time, but just for this show.
A screaming comes across the sky.
Yes. Jack, what are you watching for MMA these days? Do you still partake, or what's your diet, so to speak, with all that?
Yeah, the diet is a lot more sort of binge style now. I tend to sort of collect shows and, you know, blast through them as I realize that significant things are happening. I try to get all the fights under my belt. I can't do the digital only prelims anymore to the extent they still exist.
Yeah.
That's hard for me to take the time to seek out. My kind of line of delineation is like, if it's good enough for linear traditional television, then I'll watch it. But if it's like, if it's digital only, I'll take a much more highlights based approach, which is where the sport has always been heading. Honestly, what we said we wanted from the beginning was for it to be embraced, received, and watched like every other sport. And so do you watch every single game and every single NBA game? Of course you don't. You know, you sort of let the discourse and the people who are loyalists to the certain teams tell you what's what's impactful and what actually is going to stand the test of time. You wait to see, okay, this team's coming on. Now it's time to watch their games, as opposed to, you know, from square one trying to see everything. I think the only people left really watching every single punch and kick are gambling addicts, which is fine. You know, it's only getting more and more of a mainstreamed way to actually, you know, it's, you can make a living doing that. I mean, it's fraud as hell. And but as more jurisdictions open up to gambling on MMA fights, I can see that case. What's that?
It's like wrestling. Fraud as hell.
Fraud. You know, depends how you spell fraud. But, but yeah, so that's kind of it. You know, I'll be able to sniff in the air. This is a really big fight coming up. I need to dial in. I need to watch the countdown shows, the press conferences. I need to get familiar with the character and the story being told here. And I'm aware of who all the champions are, and I watch pretty much every televised UFC. I mean, when I say watched, I have like Cliff's Notes ways of watching certain shows, and the other shows I just, you know, take in on a Saturday night. But I kind of like it. I kind of like being in a place now where I can reliably say, all right, this is going to be a Saturday night UFC like I used to know. But it's not consumed like pro wrestling anymore. It can't be. It's a sport now.
Yeah.
It's not just this entertainment thing where they're selling traditional pay-per-views. The money's guaranteed from ESPN. It doesn't really matter what they put on pay-per-view every month, although they've had a really good year so far, I think, in terms of marquee main events that feel premium. But it's just not you're not trying to build up characters like you used to. It's not as important right. to do countdown shows that, you know, create a pro wrestling dynamic around a fight, because it matters a whole lot less that they try to sell that they try to survive 1 month at a time.
Does that era in which you were doing stuff for Sure Dog and appearing on the MMA beat and kind of in the mix, does that feel like a lifetime ago? It does yes. to me.
Yeah, because all those players have moved on too and diversified, you know. A lot of the people that I shared that desk with in MMA beat are not covering the business, or they're covering boxing as much as they're covering MMA, mm-hmm. or they're covering wrestling as much as they're covering MMA. I mean, that's what I did. I was like, wait a minute. I started Lapsed Fan while I was still pretty steeped in MMA stuff, and I was like, this is where the energy is. You can't argue with how much more willing to pay for content the wrestling fan is than the MMA fan. I mean, it's not even close. I don't even know how some of my friends in the MMA business still make a living, still keep a roof over their heads with the amount they're willing to pay for coverage of the sport. It's pathetic. And here, much more of a self-starter mentality in the wrestling media space. There is really no large vertical, because it's not a sport, sort of pretending to pay for coverage. I think Bleacher Report had a moment. Several of the sites had a moment where they were trying to staff wrestling writers. That lasts like 2 years. Two people get paid. They don't get paid much. Whereas in whereas, you know, the wrestling, because there's so much more wrestling every single week, there's so much more to keep up on, and it's so much more of a take-based business because the outcomes aren't real. And so there's so much more value to judgment to render around decision making. It's a much richer ecosystem, I feel like, to make money in. And you can't, if you're going to sink all this time into all this deep research on a passion, you might as well do it, the one of the two that actually has a fan base willing to reward you for it. Right?
Yep, exactly. All right, so coming up this weekend, we obviously have the live show, and I'm curious, based on how successful this show goes, is this something that you want to maybe take on the road? Yeah, I'm saying it. Do you want to take it on the road?
JP, can you answer that question for me? I can't deal with this anymore.
You don't want to, but if the opportunities arise, again, if someone shines the bat signal, we answer the call. I mean, there's been a lot of talk. I mean, there are a lot of people. We could have a very strong fan base in the UK, and they have wanted us to come out there for a long time for a show. If someone wants to set us up with it, great.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, you don't, like, you know, you got to spend money to make money. We don't.
Right.
And we'll leave it at that. I think, you know, we'll see how it goes Sunday. I think that'll be a nice litmus test, because this is like, you couldn't be less convenient in terms of like LA traffic after two nights of Mania, 11 o'clock at night on a Sunday night, and people are still flying from all over the place. It's a really strong proof of concept. We did a show. It wasn't a show. It was kind of like a get together at WrestleMania, Survivor Series in Boston. Mm. We rented out a luxury box, and we had some of our highest paying contributors on Patreon get invited to buy tickets to be with us. And it was sold out. We had a wonderful time with fans and kind of a unique one-to-one experience with us. It was just great. And the places people came from blew us away on fucking Thanksgiving weekend, no less, which is the craziest travel weekend of the year. Very difficult to get people to say, okay, I'm actually going to jaunt away from my family to go to Boston for the weekend, which several did from Florida, Minnesota, Canada.
Yep.
Yep. And I can think, you know, the tri-state area.
Not to mention the guy.
Michigan.
Michigan. Not to mention the guy from when the last WrestleMania we went to, the guy who came from Australia to sit with us.
Yes. That was big. Tom, when he sat with us at the WrestleMania, that Becky Lynch headline with Ronda and Charlotte. Wow. So, you know, it's like we're obliged to say, of course, we want to do more because people are telling us they want it. But it's not like we set out with a mission and a plan. We're not in this business that way. We're not looking to pitch or sell. We're just looking to answer the bell.
So you're saying you're more in the paid show mentality. They pay you, you show up, you leave, but you have all the cash. Well,
kind of.
That's the Kevin Nash mentality for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause
more or less like, I think it has to do with, again, the effort of putting it all together. I don't want to be searching around for venues. I don't even know where to, if that kind of stuff, when I have no real direction, that stuff overwhelms me like crazy and I shut down. So I don't even want to even think about that, you know? And that's kind of the reason why I shut down on originally when I was kind of pitching the idea, we threw around the idea of doing a live show in LA, it was like, I have to contact people and I have to communicate. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. And it's not because we're incapable of it. It's just because it starts to feel like by the end you pencil it out. And actually we spent more time and money getting the show put together than we made on it.
Right.
And I don't know. Call me old fashioned, but I'd like to see a profit. That'd be nice. Mm. You know, I don't need to be seen that badly that I'm willing to spend more than the next rich kid to be seen.
Well put. All right. Give the final push for where people can buy tickets for this Sunday. And
who's pushing me? What? Who's pushing who?
Is there a problem, Terry?
What? I don't know. Why do you say that, brother? Are you got a problem?
Well, I'm just wondering why you're always so afraid of who's going to get the strap next when you can't even move anymore.
What do you say? Are you, brother? What are you saying, dude? You coming up behind, brother? Are you? You hold me up, brother.
Are you Excuse me.
Between the legs, dude.
What did you say about between the legs?
What? What do you mean? Who's pushing who, brother? That's what I want to know, dude.
That's the question. The lapsed fan co-chairman and our comedy friends are getting the push. Sunday night, April 2nd, 11 p.m. Pacific time, Comedy Chateau, North Hollywood, California, Lancashire Boulevard, to be specific, right after night two of Mania. And you can get tickets by going to the Comedy Chateau's website. Just Google it. It's easy enough to find. Go down their calendar section, and you can see how to buy tickets to us on April 2nd. You can also see the pinned tweet at the top of our Twitter page, @thelapsedfan. For the details on how to buy, we're also on Instagram. Check us out there as well for a flavor of what's going on.
I want to say, too, the link is also in our link tree on our Instagram, if that's your social media preference.
Yes. So not very hard to find out how to be with us if you want to. And we'll be flyering. We'll be around. You'll be seeing us. We'll be the guys handing out Hasbros.
Mm. I mean, I did have one idea if you want to do a Russo swerve. People show up. Cardboard cutouts, and there's just Zoom, and you guys on Zoom.
Yes.
And he said, we never said we're going to physically be there. We're just going to be there.
I actually rather like
that. You said we have a show happening. We have a show that's happening. Mm-hmm. We never said it was going to be us in the show.
Mm.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. To me, that's the postmodern swerve right there.
That's how you do it. We reserve our right to just not even show up. Absolutely.
Just no show.
I think our listeners would actually appreciate that too.
I think they would.
They probably won't, but we have the best shot. We have the best shot on any podcast. I put money on us to get a fan base that would actually tolerate that and find it to be Andy Kaufman-like than anybody else. We might just show up and, you know, take a shit on the salad bar. You never know.
There's a salad bar at this place.
Brother. I have no idea, actually.
Oh, okay. So not, yeah.
Oh, Josh was going to go if there was a salad bar.
Yeah, at this point, I had Expedia pulled up on my phone. And I'm like, this may be good to check out, but now, fuck that, man.
Yeah, there's CC's next door, but you got to grapple with, it's a North Hollywood CC's. So, you know, it's not all fun.
It's been a while since I've been in NoHo, so I'm curious what it's like these days.
Yeah. Mm. And if Godfather comes through as predicted, I mean, it won't be no hoes, it'll be many.
Right.
I think Conrad's gonna. Conrad told us he's gonna be there, and who knows who he could bring? I'm actually kind of nervous that he's gonna bring someone we shit on,
like Terry,
brother. No. You think he would come? No, of course.
That'd be great if he just like front row, just sitting there staring.
Yo. Co-chairs, what's on the dizzle? I heard this gimmick, brother. You're doing these podcasts.
Brother, I heard you're on the you're in the commizzle shatizzle, brother. What's going on, dude?
So it's going to be wild. I have this vision in my head of just like complete insanity, like everyone talking over each other, something that does not resemble a formal presentation at all. Just like,
I mean, the goal is to not be ever be invited back to the comedy show. If you can pull that off, I'll say that was the biggest success of all time.
We've done it before.
Man. So salad bars, Terry Bollea, and a show so offensive and bad that no one will ever want to go back there ever again.
Not to false advertise.
Yeah.
I think we'll get the XPW guy with the syringe in his dick to come by, too.
Can we get that guy to put hooks in his back again? Can we do that?
Well, I don't think AEW would let Hook go.
Red Hook, not for nothing.
That grip, Shivani. He's got that grip. That grip strength is impeccable. The guy was D2, D3 grip strength. Pop hips. Hips pop. Popping the hips.
I told the guy to get a grip and he did it.
Let that be the tagline for Sunday night, April 2nd. Huh? So we want to thank you, Josh. It's really kind of you. It's always great to be on Wrestling Observer. One thing we can never front about is how pivotal Dave's work and Dave's empire has been to putting us in a position to do a show like this. I mean, and we're not even the one that just reads the Observer the whole time. So
it always gives a base. I'll tell you know what, like, it's a thing. If I'm doing when we do Under the Cinemat, I'm doing a modern movie, I always go right to that, you know, first right away to see what Dave's been writing about it, about the movies, because it's so interesting to see the wrestlers who are in the movies and what his viewpoint is about it, or kind of like what if he's written anything about it, kind of like the different behind the scenes than the typical media is writing about it. So for sure.
Yeah. Always. Yeah. Great launch point. Under the Cinemat is a show we do on Patreon where we look at movies involving wrestlers and do it as deep a dive as we do on the wrestling shows we cover on the main show. But the difference is JP is in the host chair as a movie fanatic on par with no one else I've ever met. I can't match him anyway. So I'm sort of in the seat he's in on the wrestling shows where I'm learning and I'm commenting and I'm making, you know, comments and kind of falling in love with certain subjects I'd never heard about before. So that's
and investigating wrestlers that we never would have the opportunity to really talk about.
Recently, Hard-Boiled Haggerty, who stars in
Earthquake.
We're in disaster movie season, and we learned all about the Hard-Boiled one as part of that. So that's something to check out as well. But yeah, again, you know, Dave's work is seminal. We're here because of Dave. So many of us are. We pretend we're not, but you're not fooling anybody. The Observer is the reason that you can have the Observer is the reason people stay wrestling fans beyond their childhood, right? And the course the Observer charts for others. Like, you can actually be a wrestling fan for the rest of your life once you get access to information about how it actually works. Right, and who the personalities actually are and how it's actually constructed and put together. That's what keeps you hooked forever. So WWE has them to thank as well, because if they're just going on the basis of what they put on screen as being enough to hold your interest, that's not enough. You have to know the backdrop of how the business works to remain intrigued for as long as we have and so many others have.
And really, it's where the Laps fans started, because you know what? It all started with these late night study sessions, if you will, back in college, where Jack would sit me down and just read
the Observer,
like his bedtime story.
I was reading it anyway.
Sit down.
I know, right?
I'm going to tell you this. Just sit.
That's yeah, exactly right. What we right. Did. Yeah.
Until he gets to the New Japan section, and then I'll sit here, just passed out.
That's perfect. You get to New Japan, then all of a sudden I'm snoring. And I'm, see, it's perfect. Best Jack, bedtime story.
Jack folds up the Observer. He's like, my work is done. And he just leaves the room.
By lamplight, baby. I was reading it anyway. And if he wanted to come hang out in the dorm room, he was going to have to listen to the Observer.
Oh, yeah.
And
man.
You're right. That's so where it started. Funny.
Like, just, you know, I've said this on the show, too. I'd go knock on the door. You know, his door would be closed. But then he'd open it up just a peek. And kind of like, you'd see only, like, he would turn off his dorm lights. Just the desk he's on. All right. And he peeks out and his eyes are bloodshot and glossy because he's so much into it. And I'm like, oh, I see what you, oh, you're reading the Observer. Okay. You're reading Dave. Gotcha. Yeah.
Right. You were observing him reading the Observer.
Exactly. Oh man. It was such amazing shit.
Yeah, that's before it was digital too. So
right.
JP, do you do a Dave imitation?
I don't do a Dave imitation. I should work on that. Should be the one I work on.
Yeah. You probably shouldn't work on that.
All right. On that note, check him out at Laughs Fan, obviously coming up this Sunday. And thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks, hey,
man. Always a pleasure. Thanks for the support and thanks for helping us reach your listeners. We hope to see as many people as possible. Let us know. Josh sent you if we do see you at the Comedy Chateau April 2nd.
Try at the salad bar. All right. Big thanks to Jack and JP. Hope you guys enjoy that. I had a lot of fun, as you can tell. And I didn't have to talk that much, if you notice. It was just those two guys going back and forth. And yeah, I get to stay out of the conversation for once. So a little bit different, but enjoyable as well. And yes, I was legit laughing. There's JP in those invitations, man. Very, very good stuff. But yeah, check those guys out this weekend. Let them know if you're there because of this show, and yeah, good stuff. So check them out in Los Angeles if you're going to be around. Laughs Fan post-WrestleMania. Couple corrections. I need to apologize to AEW. This was pointed out by Paul Fontaine several weeks ago, our good friend of the show, that my ratings for Dynamite, when I said that the post-revolution AEW Dynamite was one of the lowest rate of all time, or whatever I said, I was completely incorrect. You know why? Is because I don't know how to sort, apparently. I sort every day, Google Docs, Excel, different things like that. However, apparently I did not sort right in Cage Match. And not apparently, I definitely didn't sort right. So the post-revolution Dynamite was not the second lowest or third lowest, whatever it was. I think it was the 1, 2, 3, I think by my like 6th or 7th lowest, the lowest being August 25th, 2021. Second lowest was June 4th, 2021. There was a February edition somewhere in there. But yeah, the March 8th was like a 5.77 rating, which was certainly not the second or third lowest. So I apologize to AEW and apologize to the Dynamite rankers as it was. Should have got that right, but apparently I don't know how to sort. Coming up this week, of course, tons and tons and tons and tons of wrestling coverage here on this website. So kind of give a quick spin through. All right, so it begins on Thursday. This is outside our normal TV coverage, like, you know, Impact, Ring of Honor TV, SmackDown on Friday, Rampage, all that stuff as well. So it's going to begin on Thursday with the Mark Hitchcock Memorial Super Show. It's going to continue, of course, with Ring of Honor. We have Josh Barnett's Bloodsport. Chick Fritz is covering Super Show. Justin Nipper is doing Bloodsport. Impact That Night by Jose M. McDonald. And then we have the Impact New Japan Multiverse United with Chris Maloney coming up late night on Thursday. Then we flip to Friday. We have, of course, SmackDown Supercard of Honor covered by the one and only Suit Williams, AEW Rampage, the Hall of Fame ceremony covered by our own Ian Carey. And then Parker Clinn is going to return for Joey Janela's Spring Break coming up late night on Friday the 31st. And on Saturday, of course, we have Stand and Deliver with Chris Akin, per usual, NXT. And then first night of WrestleMania coming up. And then the second night of WrestleMania coming up, obviously, on Sunday. So no shortage of shows, live coverage, all that good stuff as well. Yeah, going to be a busy weekend. So buckle up, join us, and yeah, enjoy and try to keep your eyes open. Until next time. Insert catchphrase here. Oh, yeah. Big thanks to Jack and JP. Yeah. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.